It's a good catch. Good morning. I've been excited for this talk, this series of talks. Kyle pegged me right. I am a nature boy. I'm a hippie. You know this. I think the love of our planet is something that I'm especially passionate about. And I feel it not in a guilty way, but I do realize that the theology that I inherited was one of a subjective nature. We've been talking about that a little bit in this last series on feminine wisdom, on the dominator style versus a partnership style. And I recognize that there's a lot of stuff I've had to kind of undo and a lot of things to kind of relearn. And the cool thing about our planet is falling in love with the place that you come from is something you can do at any age. It's easier if we start as kids, but no matter how old you are, whatever it is, try to dig back to your earliest childish memories, playing in the sandbox, the dirt under your nails. For me, we lived on a pond with some woods behind us, and my brother and I would help my dad cutting down trees and that were dead for firewood. We used a wood-burning stove in our house. And I remembered as a young kid, you know, growing up with the American Boy's Guide to the Outdoors, thinking that I'm some outdoor woodsman and practicing all these things. You know, my dad would go out there and use the chainsaw, and I was not able to do that at a young age. And I would watch, and I would see the ease with which he would just fire that thing up and could just cut right through something, right through, and take that tree down. And as a young kid, I would get excited, like, oh, look at this tree. Wouldn't this be a great one to bring down? No, my dad said, if you look under the bark, if you see if this tree is green, this tree is alive. And as a young boy, as boys often are, I was just consumed with an appetite for destruction. I wanted to cut everything down and burn it and build dams. It's only later in life that I've come to appreciate the intricate web of nature and the world that we walk on. There was a verse that I inherited from my faith tradition. It came from the book of Exodus. It's probably not unfamiliar to you. It says in Exodus 3:5, when God spoke to Moses, Moses came and saw a bush that was burning but not consumed. And a voice came out of the bush and said, take off your sandals because the place that you stand on is holy ground. And I borrowed that name, that word, for the title for a couple reasons. Number one, as a formerly deconstructed Christian, it's helpful for me to take aspects of my faith and to repurpose them and to rethink about them in light of a new context. And so the idea of holy ground for me today means something different than when I first read it. We don't like to think of this world, or don't often think of this world, in that kind of cloaked, religious, spiritual language. The earth as holy, as sacred. And yet I can't think of better words to describe moments on this planet where I have connected to something far deeper than what words can explain. We tried sharing in pre-talk as everybody brought some soil, some dirt, and shared some of the stories of where they brought their dirt from. And there were so many beautiful places on this planet that we're connected to in so many different ways, places that speak to us, thinking of our planet as holy. It's more than just our home. It is sacred. It is holy. Thomas Berry is one of the two wonderful Berries that I'll be quoting from this morning. Thomas and Wendell both had a deep love of this planet. And Thomas Berry, an ecologist, said the universe by definition is a single, gorgeous, celebratory event. I've had the opportunity to hike and backpack. That's something I enjoy doing. Anything that gets me outside, kayaking and swimming and hiking. But there are a few trips that have stood out through the years. Back in 2017 was my first trip to Olympic National Park in Washington. Anybody been? Yeah. Extraordinary place. The multiple ecosystems, as you're starting out in the Ho Rainforest, and you have these lush, dense woods and ferns. And then you move up into these alpine meadows, and you see these semi-seasonal glaciers, these ice melts. It's a sacred place. Waking up, we spent over a week hiking and hammock camping. The thing I love about sleeping in a hammock is at any time during the night, when you open your eyes, to look up and to just see the stars, and to recognize that you are witnessing, you're seeing those same stars that your ancestors did generations before. My buddy and I did a hike to the Grand Tetons. We hiked up the southern side around the back, and once you hike around the back side of those Tetons that are often seen from the front, from kind of the Jackson side, you get around the other side and it feels like you're on another planet, this otherworldly, desolate rocks and sand and soil, and yet incredibly sacred as well. And then in 23, my wife and I spent a winter in our RV in the Southwest. And I have never, I've always been more of a mountain, tree kind of guy. The desert never called to me. And yet here we found ourselves in the Southwest in Arizona. And specifically to see the desert in bloom was something that I can't even begin to describe. And it gave me an appreciation for the connection of this great planet. So if any of you brought dirt or sand or soil with you this morning, I want you to take it out. We have some extra for those of you who didn't bring any. But we were sharing as we were sharing our stories in pre-talk about where we brought the dirt from, the soil from, and somebody mentioned, you know, sand being kind of lifeless, right? Not really being able to sustain life. And it's true, sand by itself needs additional nutrients to be able to generate life. And yet, in the desert, seeing the life that springs from the driest of soils, the depths to which the cactuses, the other plants go to collect and accumulate that water and to save it, and then those weeks where they're in bloom and the desert is alive. It's extraordinary. And of course we know, being here in West Michigan, I brought a lot of sand from the beach where we're spending this winter. This has been a place for us where I've connected to the land, to the water, but these beaches, specifically in front of James Street there where our place is in Holland, as I've walked those beaches this winter, as my feet have pressed into this sand, I've connected deeper and deeper with this earth and fallen in love with the dune ecosystem that is West Michigan. Something unique and extraordinary in our country and our planet. And I'm reminded of the countless other Homo sapiens before me who loved this planet, who had a relationship with the dirt that they walked on. Wendell Berry says the soil is the great connector of our lives, the source and the destination of all. It is the healer, the restorer, and the resurrector by which diseases pass into health, age into youth, death into life. Without proper care for it, we can have no community, because without proper care for it, we can have no life. My hope is, in this series, not to impart something necessarily that you didn't know about this planet. That's relatively easy to do, and we could pack our heads full of lots of BBC Planet Earth stuff, and we can watch the shows, and we can be astounded by nature. And I can geek out on that as much as anyone else. I love being astounded by this great planet. But for somebody like me, who spends a lot of time up here, it's far easier to connect to the planet at an arm's length from an academic standpoint, to really only appreciate the planet from an objective standpoint. And my hope is that during this coming month, as we're nearing Earth Day and as we have other speakers that come in, that we instead move from learning more about this planet, which is important, and that we even move past simply just an action-oriented posture, which is also important and should be celebrated. This past weekend, we had quite a few of you involved in the highway cleanup. If you were in the highway cleanup crew, raise your hand. We had a lot of highway cleanup crew. You did a fantastic job, I heard. And then our Stand for Peace crew this past weekend. If you were in our Stand for Peace, raise your hand. I love our community, that we're such an action-oriented, that our posture is towards action and engagement. And please hear me when I say this. We need to champion that. Our world needs us to step up and do. But before we move so quickly into a learning and a doing, I'd like us to spend some time in our heart space in this series and to fall back in love with this planet. Going back to Thomas Berry again, I know I'm going to confuse you. Thomas Berry, he saw himself as an eco-theologian, a theologian who connected with the divine, with the other, through the planet, through the earth. He says, "We can no longer hear the voice of the rivers, the mountains, or the sea. The trees and the meadows are no longer intimate modes of spirit presence. The world has become an it rather than a thou." So my hope is, with each week, that we connect in some tangible ways with this beautiful planet, and that the love of our mother, the love of our kin, of the place where we came from, is the foundation upon which we build our ecological activism. That the love of Earth and our connection with the sacredness of this planet is the foundation that drives the things we learn about and the things we do. It's the difference between reading the books and taking the classes for childbirth and then actually having a child. It's moving it from the realm of the esoteric and the application of facts into something that can't be put into words, a physical, tangible connection. You see, we know deep down through science that we come from the earth, and that the earth is not an it to be exploited, but a thou to revere. What Thomas is saying there is, when we move to a place where we use language that reflects the deepness of the relationship, it changes our posture, it changes our orientation. It's about remembering what we've forgotten. One of the pieces that we're going to have in this series is going to be some building upon indigenous wisdom. And we have Robert Larson connected to us, who's a Grand Valley professor, member of a West Michigan tribe, and he's going to be speaking and bringing some indigenous understandings and perspectives on land acknowledgement and the deep history of our land. But before we get down that road, I want to also clarify what we mean when we're talking about indigenous wisdom. Because I was doing some reading this past couple of weeks, and I came upon an author, he's Aboriginal, his name is Tyson Yunkaporta. And he writes about indigenous wisdom and indigenous practices in two different ways. He says indigenous is a stupid word. He says it's inadequate. Because what we really mean is human. Everything that we describe as indigenous ways of being are human ways of being. We're humans, and we have a habitat, and we're supposed to be in a habitat. So what he's saying there is that indigenous wisdom is something that we can all learn from. It's the books like Braving Sweetgrass and The Serviceberry. It's learning from people who have a rich and a deep history. And it's something that we all share in the same way that feminine wisdom and feminine archetypes are available to all of us. You understand? So these archetypal deep understandings are something that we all share access to. But when we're talking about, in the purposes of this context here, indigenous ways of being, we're simply talking about returning to who we are as human beings. That when we take off all the fancy clothes and the glasses and the cars and the house and the trappings, we're not too far removed from the ape ancestors that wandered out of the woods and began to connect in tribes. We're deeply connected to the other beings on this planet and to the planet itself, because it's where we've come from. Human beings living in greater harmony with the patterns of nature. Don't think about owning a particular parcel of land so much as sharing a really big home. Now, we've moved into a place and a stage in this world where we have governments and zoning, and we can plot tracts of land, and we can claim ownership to spaces on this planet. It's a relatively new human adaptation. If we could set that aside for the purposes of this talk and not think about this as something to own, a resource to be extracted from, but as a relative that we've forgotten we were connected to, a deep friend that we didn't even realize we'd lost touch with. So here's what I want to do for our conversation this morning. We're going to try something a little bit different. I'm going to ask you to do our best to be patient, and we'll see how this goes. We've set up kind of an earth altar. We got two of them on either side of the room, and we're going to build on this in the coming weeks. Because, as I said in the beginning, more importantly than what I can tell you, or the fancy quotes, or deep pearls of wisdom that I can throw at you. If we can get through these coming weeks and just simply be more connected to our world, I will have considered this a resounding success. If we can move into emotional connected relationship with this planet that goes beyond the things we think or say and goes beyond the ways that we act as environmental stewards, but is the way that we orient ourselves in being with this world. So some of you have dirt or soil that you brought. We're going to invite you to bring this up, and all of us are going to just simply pour a little bit of dirt into these bowls. And for those of you who don't have any, I've brought some extra sand from the beautiful shores of Lake Michigan to share. We're going to take this earth altar and each week add a different element to it. And by the end of the series, create something that we offer back to the earth as we bury it and return it back to the earth. And the point is not the sacredness of any one grain of sand or piece of driftwood, but all of it being holy. The piece that Moses neglected to realize is that it wasn't necessarily the presence of the bush and his connection with the divine that made that space holy. But what was holy was him coming into awareness of the sacredness of the world around him. So I'm going to invite my good friend Kyle to come up and play behind my fellow hippie to add a little bit of musical background for us. And here's what we'll do if we can try to do this practice. We're going to use a word that we've talked about before. Actually, Rod was talking about in meditation a while ago, this word Ubuntu, which is a South African word. Desmond Tutu, Archbishop Desmond Tutu, has frequently used it. It's a word that means, in the South African culture, I am because you are, or I am because we are. It's a beautiful word. And I want to deepen the purpose of that word this morning to the dirt and the soil that we're bringing. And as we're pouring this in, if you can, under your breath or however you want to do it, just simply whisper to the dirt, to the soil, Ubuntu, I am because you are. And to take this sacred posture of connecting with our planets by building and starting the foundation of this earth altar that we'll build on in the coming weeks. We're going to start from the back rows. We're going to walk up the outsides and then back down the front, reverse these down the middle, and work our way from